Hello and welcome to Euractiv's Agri-Food Podcast. I'm Natasha Foote.
And I'm Gerardo Fortuna.
And here's your weekly update on all things agriculture and food in the EU from Euractiv's Agri-Food News Team.
This episode is powered by EIT Food. Following the publication of the EU's farm-to-fork strategy, and with the food system facing mounting pressures, find out how a positive future of food may now be more dependent on collaboration than ever before at eitfood.eu/blog.
So recently the debate over the live export of animals in the EU and also externally outside to third countries has really been heating up. And this has come on the back of a move by the UK to actually ban the export of live animals completely. So these plans, basically, they involve the export of live animals for slaughter and fattening from England and Wales. And they were unveiled by the UK's Environment Secretary, George Eustace, last week. So the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, otherwise known as DEFRA, said the plans were part of a renewed push to strengthen Britain's position as a world leader on animal welfare. It was estimated that around 6,500 animals were sent to the EU for slaughter in 2018, according to DEFRA. And they released a statement where they said that live animals commonly have to endure what they called excessively long journeys during exports. And this is something they said causes distress and injury. So what's quite interesting about this ban is that it's being really hailed as a Brexit success, one of the few, arguably, Brexit successes. But yeah, the DEFRA was saying that EU rules previously prevented any changes to these journeys, but leaving the EU has enabled the UK government to pursue these plans. So it's pretty interesting that was kind of one of the first moves that we've seen out of the UK in terms of agriculture after Brexit. And, you know, also on the other side of the channel over in the EU, the conversation is heating up, although it's not really at the same scale. So we're not talking about, some people are talking about it, but I don't think we're really considering a full ban on live exports. But definitely the discussion is around reducing kind of the distances traveled by animals and how we can reduce these kind of transportation needs. So back in November, actually, quite interestingly, the Minister for Agriculture in the Netherlands said that she wants to see a ban on the import of Irish calves into the country and also a ban on calves from Denmark, the Czech Republic and the Baltic states. So this is something she said would make farming more sustainable. And she was arguing that from these specific areas that she finds the transport times unacceptably long and that the distances affect the welfare of calves and should cease. And this is something that, of course, can affect the free movement of goods and services in the internal market, which is widely seen as the EU's strongest asset. And we spoke to an EU source about this who was saying that, you know, member states should really refrain from introducing these kind of restricted measures that undermine the functioning of the single market, particularly in the retail and the agri-food sector. This is quite an interesting development. And we've also had several ANIT committee meetings recently. So ANIT is the fairly recently formed Committee on Protection of Animals During Transport. And during one committee meeting recently, there was the EU Agriculture Commissioner, Janusz Wojciechowski, who was really very clear about his feelings on this. I mean, he wasn't calling for an outright ban of the practice, but he definitely was a strong proponent of kind of drastically reducing the amount of animals that are moving around the EU and elsewhere outside the EU. And he was saying that after a few years of the reform on animal welfare, he hopes to see the transportation needs of animals go down overall. And this is something he called a viable solution, something he found definitely a viable concept. He didn't see any reason why this wouldn't be possible. Whereas there were certain people that did not agree with this position. So there was one MEP, Daniel Buda, who's very clear that he felt that we cannot do without this kind of transport in the EU for the time being, because certain member states depend on this completely. And he kind of said, kind of a very strong statement, some want to see an end to the live transport of animals outside the EU. Yes, only if we want to bankrupt farmers, is what he said. So pretty interesting kind of divergence of viewpoints going on in the EU. But regardless of that, as I said, also actually yesterday, so this week, there were 40 elected representatives that signed an opinion piece, which was published in Le Monde this week about animal transport and the moral and legal issues arising from the export of live animals. And one of the signatories was MEP Tilly Metz, who is also the chair of the ANET committee meeting. And we spoke to her, she spoke to YouActive, and she told us that she really welcomed the UK's move. She said this was she was positively surprised by this unveiled plan. But she said the discussion around bans on the export of live animals to third countries can be pretty heated. She said she's really interested to see the effects of what this will have on the UK farming sector and the UK's food system. Although in her opinion, for the EU, a similar ban seems to be quite far off in the future. And this is especially as the decision to limit the export of live animals lies with member states or in some cases even regions. But she did say that she found it really encouraging that more and more bans were popping up across Europe. But she was fairly careful to say that any kind of scope of a ban at the EU level would, of course, have to be based on scientifically and legally established facts. But yeah, something to watch and interesting.
And our guest this week comes from the YouActive Network, precisely from our office in Prague, Aneta Zachova. She's going to talk a bit more about the recent developments on the Commission's audit on Czech Prime Minister Babiš and his alleged conflict of interest when it comes to the use of the Common Agricultural Policy funds. We read in the headlines of Czech media that something is brewing. Is there anything news?
There is something new almost every month in the Czech Republic when it comes to the possible conflict of interest of our prime minister. Because currently there are two audits commissioned by the European Commission, and these two audits are ongoing, and they are trying to investigate how does it work in the Czech Republic when it comes to the subsidies to Agrofert Holding, is the so-called former holding of our Prime Minister Andrej Babiš, that was put into trust funds. And now the question is, if Babiš, as the Prime Minister now, is still controlling his Agrofert holding that is receiving millions of euros on subsidies, both from structural funds and from agricultural funds. So what's new now is that we know that the European Commission is convinced that Babiš is still controlling this holding Agrofert, which means that we are facing quite a big problem, because meanwhile, Babiš is owner of Agrofert. He is also negotiating about the European funds at the European level. And he's also involved in the decision-making process in the Czech Republic when it comes to EU money distribution. But this case, it's ongoing for almost 2 years. And hopefully next year there will be finally a breakthrough.
There are any rumors about the outcome of this audit, or is still kept secret?
Yeah, last 2 weeks we saw the leaked version of the Commission report when it comes to subsidies from the structural funds, and they say that Mr. Babiš controls the companies in the Agrofert group. Almost the same we learned from the previous leaks that were concerning the agriculture subsidies. So it means that, the Commission is ready to really encounter Babiš because of this problem. But meanwhile, the Czech ministries, both ministries, the Ministry for Regional Development and the Ministry for Agriculture, they are arguing that it is not true, that Babiš is not controlling Agrofert. So maybe we will see that the case will go in front of the European Court of Justice, maybe next year.
And so, and Agrifer, I mean, this is a huge agricultural company. So there were millions of subsidies involved. What kind of level are we talking about here? How much money would we be talking about that he would have potentially received? And is the European Commission looking for him to like pay that back? Would that be the next kind of step in this if he was found to still be involved in the company?
The problem is that we don't really know like how many millions of euros it is per year, because like Agrofert holding is really huge, and inside Agrofert there are smaller and like smaller companies that are also currently receiving grants. So like the problem is really huge, and also like meanwhile Agrofert is receiving money from the direct payments, like from the first pillar of CAP, but also like from the second pillar, from the rural development program. The structure of the company is so complicated that even during these audits, like new information are revealed. Even smaller companies that are not named Agrofert are actually the part of this group, and they will also probably have to like pay the money back. So yeah, we have to wait for the next year, and we will be like aware of the total sum of the money that we at the Czech Republic could maybe have to pay back in upcoming years.
And we're also a bit curious about the reaction of the public opinion in the Czech Republic, because, I mean, we're discussing this in Brussels. It's a matter of public debate in the bubble, but we're not sure about how this has been received in Czech Republic. What about the public debate in your country?
Public debate is ongoing like since Babiš became the finance minister before he became the prime minister, and like I think that the biggest problem here in the Czech Republic is that people think that like the agriculture subsidies are working only like to improve the businesses of like rich people. They don't know, or they like in media every day, almost every day, you can see reports about Agrofert, about Babiš, and about European funds. So people here in the Czech Republic thinks that European Union is just like giving money to Babiš and his business. So it's quite problematic. And the second thing is that, of course, such topic is very, let's say, interesting topic for opposition parties. So, like, Babiš is often criticized by the opposition, like every month and every week they are criticizing Babiš that he should step down as a prime minister. Next year, in October, we have general elections. And definitely these audits of the European Commission will be among the top topics during the campaign of the opposition parties.
So we'll see what comes in the next year.
And this week as well, make sure that you don't miss our special edition of our Agri-Food podcast. So just to give you a little sneak peek of what we've been up to, we've done the special edition that's dedicated to agri-trade. And in the past few weeks, we've spoken to a number of experts, policymakers, different stakeholders, lawmakers, MEPs, all kinds of people, NGOs, basically to bring you the nitty-gritty of what trading agricultural commodities and foodstuffs, why it's so important in the EU, what makes EU foodstuff and the European single market so particular for trade partners, as well as the social, political consequences that come from these kind of trade relations and free trade agreements. So definitely not one to be missed. And just in case you need any more convincing, let me give you a little sneak peek of one of our guests that we've had on the podcast. So this is John Clark, who's the director for International Affairs in the European Commission's Digi Agri on why agri-trade is so important in the framework of EU trade policy. And here's what he had to say.
The COVID pandemic has shown the importance for food security of keeping borders open, of keeping the single market running, and of open markets in general. And the sector was very resilient during the crisis. And I think, you know, our conclusion is that we need to maintain open agri-food trade. We need to diversify both our markets and our sources of supply. And even though in the new agricultural policy we'll be giving more focus on short supply chains and buying local, that is complementary to our broader international and global reach in agriculture. The two things are not at all mutually exclusive.
So if you want to hear more from all the other stakeholders we had involved in the podcast and hear more about agri-trade in the EU, be sure to tune in to our special edition of the Agri-Food Podcast.
And on Friday, the plenary of the Committee of Regions, the Committee of the Regions is an advisory institution of the European Union. And of course, it gives advices to the co-legislators, so the European Parliament and the Council, on the Commission's proposals. And the Committee of Regions, again, adopted an opinion on the farm-to-fork strategy, the EU's flagship food policy. The rapporteur of this opinion was Guido Milana, who's a municipal consigliere from Olevano Romano, which is a small town near Rome in Italy. But we spoke with Johan Calabuch, who's the regional secretary for the European Union of the government of Valencia. He's also the socialist group coordinator in the Committee of Regions Commission for Natural Resources. And he now explained us the main content of the opinion and the Committee of Regions position on the farm-to-fork strategy.
Some of your listeners could wonder why regions and cities will deal with the farm-to-fork strategy. Well, first, the farm-to-fork strategy is an investment in the future of Europe. As regional and local leaders, what we want for our citizens is a better food in our schools, less obesity in our hospitals, or clearer information for our citizens when they go to supermarket. Of course, we want also successful farmers delivering high quality products and protecting the beautiful European landscapes. Second, when we talk about agriculture, we should not forget that regions are implementing the common agricultural policy. Well, on this one, I regret that we are not also elaborating his principles, because, like Franz Timmermans, we really think that Europe is not going far enough with the CAP to green our agriculture. Maybe our union should put its words into action. So yes, as regions and cities, we support an ambitious farm-to-fork strategy.
And we move to the livestock sector. There was a new report by the European Network of Wildlife Professionals Project, and it was released this week, and it basically showed models for wild boar distribution, including control of spatial autocorrelation. And the report, which was funded by the European Food Safety Agency, EFSA, aims to ensure more precise estimates on wild boar for better risk assessment on African swine fever. And there's another news that actually involved the livestock sector. 34 MEPs wrote a letter this week criticizing a new commission-funded project. It's a communication campaign which aims to promote the consumption of beef products. You probably heard in the past weeks. So it is a campaign approved by the Commission in 2019 that will last for 3 years. And according to the MEPs, this campaign aim to incite the consumers not to have a stereotyped idea about red meat, but in the end, it goes in contrast with the farm-to-fork strategy, and particularly the aim of reducing, of moving to a more plant-based diet with less red and processed meat. And lastly, the Farmers Trade Union, the European Federation of Food, Agriculture and Tourism Trade Unions, EFAT, has released a new interesting report exploring the reasons why COVID-19 spreads easily in meat plants and what to do to mitigate the risk. So they found that the temperature and humidity can affect COVID transmission risk, and particularly in dry and cold environments where there's a greater transmission. And also COVID is more likely to be transmitted indoors where air circulation may be less robust. And so this is common in food processing facilities where physical distancing has not traditionally been a feature, either on the production lines or in staff break, you know, the relaxation areas. That's why COVID actually spread so easily in the food processing industry. This week, the AgriFood podcast is produced by Euractiv's AgriFood team, Gerardo Fortuna and Natasha Foot, with the technical support of Evi Chiori. Be sure to subscribe to our newsletter so you don't miss the latest agricultural news from the EU.
And this podcast is also available on all major streaming platforms. That includes Amazon, Apple, Spotify, and Stitcher. So that's all from us. I'm Natasha Foot. Thanks for listening and see you next week.